Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning from Poland is Jonathan Ornstein, Executive Director of the Krakow Jewish Community Center in the midst of the Ukrainian refugee crisis. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on 2 Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. 2 Jewish is paid for by 2 Jewish radio programs and podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2 Jewish.
Shalom. I hope everybody had a great Purim last week, celebrating the wonderful Jewish springtime festival appropriately or inappropriately, if that's your custom. And if Purim is now in our rearview mirror, that means that the true Jewish springtime holiday, the Festival of Freedom, Passover, is nearly exactly a month away. Or to be more specific, Pesach begins with the first night Seder, Friday, April 15th at sundown, less than 4 weeks away. This year, Passover comes at a time when its central theme, liberation from bondage and oppression, looms ever larger in the world. Authoritarianism has been increasing around the planet, and dictatorial leaders, fascists of every description, are in power in important places on this earth, from Brazil to the Philippines to North Korea to Turkey to Uganda, from Venezuela to China to Syria to Iran to Hungary. This disturbing trend in the world, in which even some formerly democratic representative governments slide towards autocracy, reached its current nadir when the man who styles himself the new Tsar of Russia, the corrupt Vladimir Putin, invaded democratic Ukraine. He has brutally sought to terrorize its population into surrendering sovereignty and integrity to his imperial designs. It's not at all clear that the ancient Pharaoh of the Exodus, who enslaved the Israelites, was as brutal as the man whose forces are indiscriminately bombing hospitals, schools, and apartment blocks all across Ukraine right now. But it is an important reminder that the end result of tyranny is always disastrous war, death, and destruction, and that violent oppression must be resisted directly and courageously, as Ukraine is under its Jewish president, Volodymyr Zelensky, now doing. Passover is the model for nearly every Western freedom festival, and most such movements for freedom take inspiration from this ancient tale of powerless slaves fighting for freedom and winning. In the Torah's telling, the main actor in the drama is not Moses, the courageous leader, but God, and the redemption is both divinely given and miraculous. In our world, we cannot hope for such heavenly intervention and must seek to achieve freedom through our own humble human efforts. The charge is clear. At times of brutal repression, our responsibility is to resist tyranny and to support those who fight for freedom in the face of repression. There's another great lesson of Passover. It's embodied in the Jewish understanding of our own heritage. Every year, we remind ourselves that our own ancestors were simple slaves at the bottom of the social order of their era and were forced to become refugees seeking freedom and opportunity in a new land. Many times throughout our long history, we have been quite literally wandering Jews, forced from our homes and lands to become refugees and immigrants to new places, cultures, to learn even new languages. That deep communal memory has shaped us and helped us identify with the downtrodden of the world, people forced by bigotry and warfare to wander to new countries and continents. It has compelled us to build new lives on alien soil again and again. Many times throughout the millennia, we Jews have been strangers in strange lands. And that memory of oppression, brutal expulsion, loss, and leaving has impressed itself on our people's consciousness. We Jews identify not with the oppressors, but with the oppressed. We connect with those in need, not with those exploiting them. We have a little less than 4 weeks before Passover begins, which makes this period an ideal time for us not only to prepare for Pesach, always a very serious project in a Jewish home, but also to figure out how we can make a difference in increasing freedom in the world and in resisting tyranny. No one person can remake this disturbing trend around the planet by himself or herself, but we can help alleviate the suffering of those impacted by it through our generosity and our caring. And we can fight this fascistic authoritarianism whenever and wherever it appears, including right here at home. To play us in this morning on the theme of freedom in Judaism, here's an early play-in from our pre-Passover preview of Pesach music. Avadim Hayinu, we were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, but now we are free.
Avadim Hayinu, Hayinu, Atam b'nei chorin, b'nei chorin. Avadim Hayinu, Atah, Atah, b'nei chorin. Avadim Hayinu, Atah, Atah, b'nei chorin, b'nei chorin. Avadim Hayinu.
That was Avadim Hayinu by cantor Jill Pakman. We were slaves, but now we are free. From the Passover Seder coming up in a little less than 4 weeks, starting April 15th, Pesach. Join us at Congregation Beit Simcha, my own synagogue, for our second night community Seder, Saturday night, April 16th. Our theme is freedom with an outstretched hand, focusing on helping refugees on this great festival of freedom. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is our good friend, Jonathan Ornstein, Executive Director of the Jewish Community Center of Krakow, Poland, speaking to us from the midst of the Ukrainian refugee crisis, where they are helping hundreds and even thousands of the flood of displaced women and children from the Russian war on Ukraine, the refugees. Meet Jonathan Ornstein when we come back in a moment here on Two Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish good friend, Jonathan Ornstein. He's the executive director of the JCC, the Jewish Community Center of Krakow, Poland, which has been in the midst of this incredible and terrible refugee crisis. Good morning and welcome back to Two Jewish, Jonathan.
Good morning, Rabbi. Pleasure to be here.
Tell me, there are now literally millions of refugees from the war in Ukraine, including many Jewish refugees. Tell me a little bit about how many of them have come to you guys in Krakow, what the situation is like now.
Sure. So people have been pouring across the border for I guess, almost 3 weeks at this point, Jews and non-Jews. The numbers are hard to say. We have, I think, over 1.5 million refugees in Poland. Probably about 140,000, 150,000 in Krakow. Some of them are Jewish. It's hard to say really how many. We are helping everybody. So anybody that we're able to help, we've turned our center really into a humanitarian aid center, and we're doing things in the building have a presence on the border, are sending supplies into Ukraine, and are working with partner organizations here to help support them. So doing a lot, and as an institution, we have probably over 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people we've helped in different ways so far.
The situation was shocking. Nobody expected this a few weeks ago, did they?
No, I think that although there were troops massed at the borders, we didn't think that there was really going to be an invasion. We certainly didn't think there was going to be an invasion of this size and magnitude, and we absolutely didn't think it was going to last this long. 3 weeks and counting.
In Krakow, the center of Krakow is not a very large place where the JCC is located. Are you housing people at JCC? I know you're providing meals. Tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing directly.
Sure. So our JCC, which is not a very big building, has been turned into a collection and distribution point for supplies. So that's food, medical supplies, toiletries, sanitary items, diapers, things like that. So there are a couple hundred people a day coming in, Ukrainians a day coming in and receiving, taking material, taking what they need. We're providing also psychological and legal advice to them about what they can do. We're helping people. Sometimes people will contact us and say, I have a relative in Israel, I have a brother in France, and we'll buy them a train ticket or a plane ticket, help them get where they need to go. We've set up a daycare center, which is around the corner from the JCC. We have about 30 children in there. Next to it is a safe space for mothers, so their mothers have a place to be. We should remember, a main component of all of this is that this is almost all women and children coming out. So it's men between 18 and 60 aren't allowed out of the country. So we created this safe space for the mothers where they have this can hang out. They have a coffee, they have English lessons, Polish lessons, and providing them with social services that we need. Beyond that, we're housing about 200 people. That number is changing, goes up, goes down, and it's generally increasing all the time, which in hotel rooms and apartments that we've sourced around the city. The city is very, very full, as you would imagine. So have people in their apartments, although people here don't have very large apartments. We have a JCC member who has a house, a small house, and she has 20 people living in her house from Ukraine at this point. Besides that, we have some partner organizations. We're running an information point. We're working with other organizations to help them fund psychological services and legal services. And then we have, which is also very, very important, we have a presence on the border. So we're about 150 miles from the border, and we're working with an organization, which is actually a Christian organization that we've had a relationship with for a while, and they're doing a lot of good humanitarian work. I've been working in Ukraine for a while, and we've helped them purchase and set up tents on the Ukrainian side of the border at one of these border crossings. There are 8 in Poland. So at this border crossing, not that far from Krakow, we have tents. You know, these people, it's a tragic situation. Sometimes it takes these people 2-3 days traveling across Ukraine in terrible conditions, very scary, going through, war zone, and they get to the border, and there's sometimes also a long wait. It's very cold, minus, temperatures below freezing in the evening. So we've helped with tents and heated tents, and people can get food and some emergency medical treatment if they need it on the Ukrainian side. And also we're sending medical supplies in, and we're sending direct medical supplies that go into Ukraine and then get distributed where they need to go to different communities in Ukraine and bring people back out. So the other day we helped this organization go in. They had 29 buses and they brought in supplies and they brought out 1,000 people at once. So we've become very busy. We're normally as a JCC, we're a service provider, and we've had to change what we're doing, but also the way we're doing it, to work with these local partners to be able to amplify the help that we can give.
We will talk much more with Jonathan Ornstein about the tremendously difficult challenges that Krakow is facing, that the JCC is facing, and all the work that they're doing to try to help refugees when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this spring. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. New progressive congregation, well, kind of new, in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or attend on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary in person. Call 520-276-5675. Beit Simcha Synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road in the north side of Ina, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall in our own building. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. In-person Friday night and Saturday morning services are available at 2270 West Ina Road. You can email me, rabbi at BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Friday night services are at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning services are at 10 a.m., preceded by Torah study at 9 o'clock, all with me leading them. Our Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimchaTucson. Our services are available with full music, in person, and online. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are live and on Zoom. You can access those through our website or email me, rabbi at BeitSimchaTucson.org. Wonderful religious school is available in person and on Zoom in blended format. Join us for Passover this year. Freedom with an outstretched hand as we celebrate with a magnificent second night community Seder at Beit Simcha, Saturday night, April 16th, 6:30 p.m., led by me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, a full and delicious Passover meal, and more importantly, perhaps, a powerful affirmation of freedom and hope in this season of Pesach. BeitSimchaTucson.org is where you go to sign up, or call 520-276-5675, and you can donate to Ukrainian Refugee Relief when you sign up for our second night Seder. For more information about Beit Simcha, to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes programs, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, and rich array of adult education academy courses taught in person and on Zoom, and of course, all of our services on Facebook and in person, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest-growing Jewish community in all of Southern Arizona in its exciting beginning years. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O, JewishRadio18@gmail. Visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts, top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 175,000 downloads on Podbean. That's 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. T-O-O, JewishRadio.com. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520 888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470 to speak to a family advisor at Evergreen. Call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We started talking last week about history, the ignorance of history, and how that impacts the way that we think about the world. In particular for Jews, you would think Jews would have some knowledge of history since obviously we've been around, 3,800 years, and our history is deeply imbued in our holidays, in our experience, in our memories. So much of what it means to be Jewish is to relate to history. But a lot of Jews who come from, say, the part of the world that's been in the news all the time, Ukraine, Russia, Belarus, all that entire part of the world, Eastern Europe in general, really don't understand that area, to be honest.
Well, part of the problem is that in that area, boundaries kept shifting, and the same town could find itself one year in Austro-Hungary, the next year in Hungary, a couple years later in Czechoslovakia, then in the USSR, and finally today in independent Ukraine.
Right.
So that's like within 100 years, one town. So imagine, take the collectivity of American Jews. Many of us have Eastern European origins, and many of us were told by our grandparents, our great-grandparents, we came from Russia.
Right.
But what does that mean when you break it down? That means that they came from lands that were once ruled by the Tsar and part of the Tsarist Empire, and after 1917 were part of the Soviet Union. But today, those lands include places like Latvia and Lithuania and Ukraine, which are independent countries, at least for the moment.
And then my favorite was my mom's parents, who said they came from Russia, Poland. And you're like, those are two different countries. Oh, no, that's the part of Poland that Russia controlled as opposed to the part that Germany controlled or Prussia.
Right. So for a long time, there was this entity called the Kievan Rus that went as far north, very far north of Kiev, in fact. The whole eastern part of Finland, which is called Karelia, was part of the Principality of Novgorod, which in turn was part of the Kievan Rus, even though it's very far north and east of Kiev. Then there was another major entity that went from the Baltic Sea to the Black Sea called the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth for centuries.
Right.
So that a lot of what is
so it's
today...
actually powerful semi-empire for a while.
A lot of what is today Ukraine was part of that Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. And one of the great divisions between Yiddish-speaking Jews was the Galicianers and the Litvaks, right?
Of course.
So both Galicia and Lithuania were provinces of this Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. And a huge chunk of what is today Ukraine has belonged on and off to either Poland or Lithuania or this combined Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, and then ultimately to the Austro-Hungarian Empire. So when you talk about Ukraine, it was a geographical reference, but for centuries, it wasn't a political reference. There was no Ukrainian government. There was no Ukrainian nation, and certainly not an independent one, for at least 350 years, from the early 1600s till 1991. So when American Jews talk about Ukrainian anti-Semitism, Ukrainian pogroms, Ukrainian behavior during World War II, they're really talking about the behavior of other empires, whether it's the Tsarist Empire or the Soviet Empire or the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, whatever.
Or the Nazi-influenced puppet state, or whatever it that was.
That was brief. That was a brief interlude. But I mean, for centuries, when American Jews got the idea that Ukrainians were so horribly anti-Semitic, they were really talking about the actions and policies of other governments.
It's a very complicated part of the world. You know, Americans are used to borders that don't change much. That has not been the case in that part of the world for a long time. Thanks so much, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. One day, a group of scientists decided humanity no longer needed God. They picked one scientist to go and tell God they were done with him. The scientist walked up to God and said, God, we've decided we don't need you anymore. We can clone people. We can manipulate atoms, build molecules, fly through space, do so many miraculous things. Just go away. Mind your own business from now on, God. God listened very patiently. Then the scientist finished talking, and God said, okay, how about this? Before I go, let's have a human-making contest. The scientist replied, okay, we could do that. Bent down to pick up a handful of dirt. God wagged a finger and said, no, no, make your own dirt. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion, Shmini, third in the book of Leviticus, includes a very dramatic and traumatic event. The tabernacle in the wilderness has just been consecrated, and the priests, Moses' brother Aaron and his sons, are beginning their service there. God's presence, the Shekhinah, fills the tabernacle. All is right with the people and apparently the whole world. And then suddenly, disaster strikes. Aaron's eldest sons, newly ordained priests, Nadav and Avihu, offer Esh Zarah, strange fire, to the Lord. They are immediately struck down and devoured by divine flame, dying before the Lord. In the aftermath of this tragic shock, Moses consoles Aaron with peculiar words. God says, by those brought near to me, I am consecrated and honored before the people. There is no mention of whether Aaron accepts this as a just ending for his sons. The text merely says, Vayidom Aharon. Aaron was silent. We do not know the young priest's offense, if there was any. We are not told what the strange fire was. God decrees, atonement offerings are made for whatever sin the young men may have committed, and the people are restored to God's favor. There's no further explanation given in the Torah, although the rabbis later create a variety of possible explanations for the disaster. Perhaps the young men were drunk, or they offered sacrifices that weren't ordered by God, or maybe they were actually engaged in some form of idolatry, or perhaps they were too arrogant and usurped their father Aaron's place. The truth is, we don't know why they died. Of course, that's not just true in the Torah or in Shmini, this portion. We also do not know why most tragedies take place in our own lives, or why terrible things sometimes happen to good people. As Ben Sirach says in the text Ecclesiasticus from the Apocrypha of the Hebrew Bible, we have been shown more than we can understand. God keeps the rationale private. We just don't know, and likely won't know. So, what do we know? Well, we do know that Aaron's silence may be the only real response to profound tragedy and loss. Our own comfort and consolation may come only when we silently acknowledge our own powerlessness. This may seem small comfort indeed, but it is also an honest appraisal of our ability to comprehend profound loss. May God keep us from tragedy, but may God also give us the strength of Aaron when we must face it, the ability to accept the painful inadequacy of our own explanations with dignity and courage. When we come back on Two Jewish, our guest, Jonathan Ornstein, executive director of the Krakow JCC, tells us what they are doing now to alleviate the suffering of the refugees and the challenges that the wave of people coming from Ukraine who have found refuge in Poland are experiencing, and how we can help from here. Find out in just a moment on Two Jewish.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
A top rabbi in Portugal's second largest city has been detained by the authorities amid an inquiry into just how Roman Abramovich, the Russian Jewish oligarch sanctioned this week in response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, obtained Portuguese citizenship last year. Rabbi Daniel Litvak of the Jewish Community of Porto, an organization representing the Jews of that city, was arrested last week, just as he was preparing to depart for Israel. Multiple Portuguese agencies have been investigating whether Abramovich's citizenship was properly awarded under Portugal's 2013 law that allowed naturalization for descendants of Sephardic Jews. The law represented an attempt to atone for the Inquisition, campaign of religious persecution in Spain and Portugal in the 16th century, as well as the general expulsion of the many thousands of Jews that was forced them to immigrate, hide their Jewish identity, or denounce it altogether. The Portuguese government delegated the task of vetting applications for citizenship under the Sephardic law to two groups, the Jewish Community of Lisbon and Litvak's own organization in Porto. Tens of thousands of applicants have become Portuguese citizens under the law, which helped turn Porto into a Jewish destination. Roman Abramovich's citizenship, which gave him a European Union passport for the first time, valuable thing, an EU passport, raised questions because most Russian Jews are Ashkenazi and certainly don't have Sephardic roots. But Litvak said in January he was sure an investigation would show that his organization had assessed Abramovich's application as it would anyone else's. Well, Litvak is now in custody. We shall see. Israel announced plans to set up a field hospital in western Ukraine as the Russian war of aggression against Ukraine showed no signs of abating. Israeli leaders last week approved 21 million shekels, or about $6.5 million, to build a hospital, according to an announcement from the office of Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, who has been involved in various mediation efforts. Israel, mindful of the Russian military presence and influence in the Middle East, hoping to play a mediating role in ending the war, has been reluctant to fully commit to the West's isolation of Russia since the Russian army invaded Ukraine on February 24th. The field hospital Israel is setting up is a humanitarian move, but a hospital in a region of Ukraine closer to the borders with NATO-allied countries offers a meaningful signal about Israel's relationship to the Western alliance that is confronting the Russian invasion. Israel's field hospitals, deployed frequently in natural disasters, are seen as the most advanced in the world. Establishing a field hospital in Ukraine is an initiative that not many countries are capable of taking on themselves, Bennett said. The State of Israel has this capability. We are getting underway. This is important. I'm pleased that we, the Health Ministry and the Foreign Ministry, with the assistance of the Finance Ministry, are leading it.
Zu der Ball gehen, zum Eulen, wo mir doch gehen. Kauf mir den nisslichen Cracker Jack, will ich kein Mul von dort nicht weg. Jetzt ist gut, mut die Ballspieler, es passt nicht, als man verspielt. Weil sie sehen, zwei, drei Steigs neues bei der Baseballspiel.
Jewish baseball legend Sandy Koufax will be immortalized with a statue at Dodger Stadium this summer. The Hall of Fame pitcher will join his trailblazing teammate Jackie Robinson, whose bronze statue was unveiled in the center field plaza in 2017. Artist Brantley Cadet, who made the Robinson statue, also created the Koufax sculpture. The Dodgers had announced the Koufax statue way back in 2019. The unveiling originally was planned for the summer of 2020, but you know, coronavirus, had other ideas. The news ceremony will be held June 18th prior to a game against the Cleveland Guardians. They used to be known as the Indians. The first 40,000 ticketed fans will receive a replica of the Koufax statue. Dodgers president, CEO Stan Kasten announced the new date. He said fans entering the center field gates would now be greeted by Robinson and Koufax. Not only are both of these Hall of Famers part of our rich Dodgers history, they are also continuously inspiring sports fans everywhere, Kasten said. Koufax, who is now 86 years old, became the youngest player to enter baseball's Hall of Fame when he was inducted in 1972 at the age of 36. That same year, the Dodgers retired Koufax's jersey number, 32, alongside Robinson's iconic 42, which is now retired across Major League Baseball. One of the best pitchers in baseball history, Koufax was a member of four World Series championship teams, winning two World Series MVP awards. Koufax also won a National League MVP and three Cy Young Awards during his 12-year career with the Dodgers. He had a career record of 165-87, a .276 earned run average, 2,400 strikeouts, 137 complete games, and 40 shutouts. He was the first pitcher to throw four no-hitters. And, of course, among Jewish fans, Sandy Koufax is best known for a game he did not pitch. Game 1 of the 1965 World Series fell on Yom Kippur, and Koufax famously declined to play. And now he'll have a statue. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews round the world. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome back to Two Jewish, Jonathan Ornstein, the executive director of the Jewish Community Center in Krakow, Poland, who talked at the beginning of the show about all of the various kinds of work that they're doing to help Ukrainian refugees. I want to focus a little bit. You mentioned the political and practical, well, everything's practical, of course, but political and maybe even economic measures you're taking. Obviously, some of the people have relatives elsewhere in Europe or in Israel. There are all kinds of complicated diplomatic channels and things. How do you help people in those circumstances?
So we're speaking to different consulates and embassies. If it's Israel, obviously it's a little easier because as a Jewish organization, we're very connected to Israel and, you know, can pick up a cell phone of somebody, whether on the Israeli side or here on the Polish side. Other countries, we're trying to do what we can, and, you know, just try to be a facilitator, to be a connector, and to help people get where they need to go. You know, we understand that Krakow is a small city. We have a city of about 750,000. So having 150,000 refugees here is obviously taxing the capacity of the city. So one of the better things that we can do is to help people move on, especially if they have a place to go and, you know, and from the people waiting for them that care about them somewhere, then we'll do everything we can to get them there.
I know that actually a member of my congregation's son, they've now moved on to Copenhagen. They were in Krakow because there's some belief that they can get visas to the United States from Copenhagen. This is going to be a humanitarian crisis for a long period of time. I mean, this isn't something that's going away. It's only increasing now, isn't it?
Massive crisis. You know, on the international scale, of course, being in Poland and focused on the Polish aspect. But before the war, we had 1.5 million Ukrainians living in Poland. So since 2014, when we started to have problems with Russia, with the Crimea and with the eastern part of Russia over the years, so Ukrainians have been coming here and staying. So there was already a sizable Ukrainian population, which makes it more, I think, a more attractive place for Ukrainians to be, culturally very close, linguistically close to Poland. Part of Ukraine, of course, used to be Poland up until World War II. So there's that sort of shared common relationship there.
And the weather is pretty much the same, cold.
The weather is pretty much the same. Yeah, exactly. So, well, it depends. Actually, the south of Ukraine has nice weather. Odessa has much better weather than we do. So we're going to see Poland, which is not a very rich country, you know, maybe doing better than Ukraine overall, but economically, you're going to see a country, Poland, that's going to absorb, in some sense, have to absorb millions of these refugees. Because even in the best case scenario, if things end tomorrow, you know, and which is not happening, a lot of those people aren't going to go back. They've lost their homes. The country will have so much, such a challenge to be able to rebuild, that we're going to see a massive migration of people from the center of Europe. And some will stay here. Probably the largest amount will stay here in Poland, but they're going to go everywhere in the world. And I think that a country like Poland really needs the assistance of the world to be able to make sure that these people can get absorbed and integrated into the society.
You're obviously helping people of all backgrounds. Do you have a sense for how many Jewish refugees directly you guys have been involved with?
A couple hundred, for sure. No question. We're housing now. There's a housing and head of one of these Jewish communities in Ukraine who is 80 years old, and he's in a hotel, and he speaks Yiddish and Ukrainian, and we're speaking to him, and all he's worried about is his community and what's going to happen and what's happening to his community. So we have Jews that we're helping here in Krakow. We have Jews that we've helped bring out of Ukraine and help them get somewhere else, and just doing what we can for everybody. You know, at the end of the day, though, the Jews are better off, because the Jews, we have a network that the rest of the world doesn't have, and we're used to this in some sense, maybe not this exact type of war, but our history has made us more interconnected, and we're used to absorbing each other and bringing each other in if that's necessary. So while, of course, I'm worried about everyone and worried about the Jews, the non-Jews are the ones who really are going to have much worse off, because they don't have the infrastructure that we have as a people.
In doing this work, and obviously it's just complicated, you guys are set up to provide some kinds of care. You're used to doing all kinds of services. What's the most challenging aspect of what you've had to modify to do at the JCC in Krakow?
I think the most challenging thing is having a staff that's not used to this. So everyone here is here in a mission-driven sense. Nobody's here just to get a paycheck. And our staff of Jews and non-Jews has had to do something that's very different than what they're trained for. You know, we're not experts in giving humanitarian care. People walking in who, you know, just lost family members or are worried they'll never see their fathers and sons and brothers and husbands and partners again is very taxing emotionally on our team. So that's been a real concern for me. You know, I can handle these things. I'm okay, but I have to, be mindful of the toll on the staff. So for us, I think that for me is a big challenge. We brought in psychologists to talk to the staff, to help them with dealing with it themselves, and also to help advise how to deal with these refugees coming through.
You know, with all of the basic needs that the refugees have for food, clothing, shelter, education. The notion that there'll be a tremendous wave of PTSD should also be prevalent, maybe because I'm married to a psychologist, but it's the caregivers sometimes who also have to face that experience. Saw pictures of you guys at the border. What is it like there?
So it's interesting that I've been to two border crossings, and it's a very different story on one side versus the other. So on the Polish side, there are a lot of help. There are a lot of people here that are on this side waiting to help people who've come from all over Poland, all over the world, different aid agencies, individuals. There are tents set up with, you know, from all different countries and organizations that are providing food and all different help. But I mean, it's tragic, but those are people you're generally getting people when they're very happy to be on the Polish side of the border. Where you see it, where it's more difficult situation is on the Ukrainian side. So we went through to, you know, last week was on the Ukrainian side of the border. And, you know, those are people who've just gotten out of cars and don't know how long it's going to be at the border and what that looks like. And it's a very different emotional atmosphere on the Ukrainian side, which is also why we felt that we wanted to focus with this organization we're working with to try to alleviate suffering on the Ukrainian side, because there's a lot being done on the Polish side, and it's much harder, of course, on the other side.
This isn't your natural mandate. How do you fund all this extra work?
Yeah, so we're receiving donations. We've set up a special link for people to send us money through we have a Friends of organization based in the United States, so a 501c3 that people can make tax-deductible donations. I mean, we're spending a lot of money. The hotel rooms are probably $10,000 a day that we're spending on just the housing and feeding these people. And then with all of these other things that we're doing, sending medicine and supplies in, it's costing us a lot of money. So this is, of course, not what our mandate usually is. But at the end of the day, our mandate as a Jewish organization and as the Jewish people is to try to make this world a better place for everyone. And if there's suffering near us, then our mandate, of course, becomes to try to alleviate that suffering to the best of our ability.
To you, this is a difficult question, but what's the most hopeful thing you've experienced in the course of these 3 weeks?
I think the outpouring of support and love and caring from the world is just something phenomenal. And if I would look back on these 3 weeks and define it, I don't think I would define it as much by the suffering of the people I see or by the evil, if you will, of Putin and this unjust war. But I would say the thing that stays with me the most at this point is the incredible goodwill around the world of people who just want to help. And because we're near the front lines, we are, you know, I'm inundated with phone calls and emails and texts and everything else for people who just want to do anything that they can, from sending a check to $5 to sending a check for $100,000 to getting on a plane to sending sending diapers in the mail. And it's been a beautiful thing to see how Poles have responded, but how the entire world has responded.
Yeah, I admit I'm a little biased. The energy of the JCC of Krakow has always been, and I think it emanates from you and the great staff that you've created, so positive and embracing. It'll be a challenge for a long time. This isn't going away anytime soon. How can people help? Where can they go to find out more? How can they do more to help the refugees in Krakow in particular?
So we have, as I said, we've set up through our website, which is friendsofjcckrakow.org, jcckrakow.org. And then there you can see a link, but there's a special link set up, which is friendsofjcckrakow.org/Ukraine. And even if without the /Ukraine, you can just write that it's for Ukraine, and then the money will get to us. And you can reach out to me as well directly if people want to help and send materials and stuff, and we can discuss that. But generally speaking, it's the most efficient thing to do at this point is to send money so we can help pay for this stuff that we're doing.
I want to thank Jonathan Ornstein. I wish we could be talking about happier subjects, but sometimes this is the most important thing to be talking about. And as we move from Purim towards Pesach, the holiday of freedom, we're reminded Jews have always been refugees. And certainly you guys are taking on that mandate and acting on it and understanding the situation. Thank you for what you're doing. And God willing, things will improve sometime soon.
Thank you for your friendship and your support and for connecting me to your wonderful community.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Deborah Meyer, the CEO of Moving Traditions, a remarkable organization helping Jewish youth affirm their own identities. And don't forget, you can join us, Congregation Beit Simcha, in person every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning, 2, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush, live, in person, and available on our Facebook page. Sign up now for our wonderful second night Passover Seder at Beit Simcha, which will also include donations for Ukrainian Jewish relief. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org for more information. Sign up to affirm freedom with an outstretched hand at this season of Passover. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes, well, it's probably my favorite Sephardic song for Passover. Coming up in a little less than 4 weeks, Quien Supiense, Who Knows One, from the song sung at the conclusion of the Seder, this version by Israeli icon Yehoram Gaon. My friends, may you have a healthy week, a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week we pray profoundly of peace.
Quien supiense y entendiense, alabar al Dios creyense, cual es el uno, cual es el uno. Uno es el Criador, uno es el Criador, uno es el Criador, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo. Quien supiense y entendiense, alabar al Dios creyense, cuáles son los dos, cuáles son los dos. Dos Moshe y Aaron, uno es el Criador, uno es el Criador, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo. Quien supiense y entendiense, alabar al Dios creyense, cuáles son los tres, cuáles son los tres. Tres nuestros padres son, dos Moshe y Aarón, uno es el Criador, uno es el Criador, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo. Quien supiense y entendiense, alabar al Dios creyense, cuáles son los cuatro, cuáles son los cuatro. Cuatro madres de Israel, tres nuestros padres son, dos Moshe y Aarón, uno es el Criador, uno es el Criador, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo. Quien supiense y entendiense, alabar al Dios creyense, cuáles son los cinco, cuáles son los cinco. Cinco libros de la ley, cuatro madres de Israel, tres nuestros padres son, dos Moshe y Aarón, uno es el Criador, uno es el Criador, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo. Quien supiense y entendiense, alabar al Dios creyense, cuáles son los sesh, cuáles son los sesh. Sesh días de la semana, cinco libros de la ley, cuatro madres de Israel, tres nuestros padres son, dos de Moshe y Aarón, uno es el Criador, uno es el Criador, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo.
en supiense y entendiense, alabar al Dios creyense, cuáles son los cinco, cuáles son los cinco, cinco libros de la ley, cuatro madres de Israel, tres nuestros padres son, dos de Moshe y Aarón, uno es el Criador, uno es el Criador, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo. En su piense y entendiense, alabar al Dios creyense, cuáles son los seis,
cuáles son los seis,
seis días de la semana, cinco libros de la ley, cuatro madres de Israel, tres nuestros padres son, dos de Moshe y Aarón, uno es el Criador,
uno es el Criador, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.